I was almost killed by my ex-boyfriend. I'll be changing the names to protect myself. Now I'll start with a quick backstory. At the time of the attack, I was 19, almost 20. My ex, Gavin, was 27, and we had a big chow chow and a cat. The dog was his and the cat was mine. We lived in a three-bedroom house. A few months before, we had allowed a friend to stay with us, Lacey, and it didn't end well, as she was just sort of taking advantage of us. The week leading up to the attack, Gavin had just gotten back from his work trip, which I believe was about 3 to 4 weeks away from home. And the week that he was back, he was completely out of it, unable to complete a thought. I'd ask or tell him something, and less than 5 minutes later, he'd completely forget or just not have heard me, just off in some other world almost. And one day, I was very frustrated with all of this, and I'd ask for help with chores or for him to take the garbage out, only to be ignored. One day, he said that if it continued, he wanted me to slap him. Now, we had gone out for dinner with his mom 2 days prior to this attack, and she was obviously very worried about him, as there was clearly something wrong. And at the time, the only mental disorder that he had or was aware of was OCD, though I am now even more convinced that it's not what he had by any means. And the day of the attack, we had just gotten back from grabbing some takeout and were sitting on the couch in the living room. I had been painting my nails while he was playing Mario Kart, and he looked over at me and said, "Lacey put a curse on my family." I was dealing with my own really poor mental health at the time, so I wasn't really in a space where I could be focusing on his. I have BPD, and I wasn't sure what to do. So I suggested that he hop in a cold shower, as it had helped him earlier in the week to reset a bit. He walked into the bathroom, muttering to himself, and it just felt so off. Now, I don't know how to describe it. I just didn't feel safe. And I walked over and asked if I could call his mom for a bit, maybe invite her over for supper, kind of beating around the bush that I wanted her to come help him. He looked at me and just started yelling that all he needed was me. I walked out and started toward the living room as I was calling his mom. He came out of the bathroom naked and started yelling at Ollie, the dog, to discipline me and attack me. Mind you, he was trained as my guard dog. And at this point, I believe his mom had answered the phone and heard what was happening. He started calling me Lacey and saying that I needed to pay for what I did. I immediately ran into the bedroom with my phone and his mom was still on the line. He kicked down the door, smashed my head into our mirrored closet doors, and threw my phone to the ground. He was screaming that he was going to kill me. I scrambled out of the bedroom, trying to get to the front door, and as I was passing the kitchen, he got a hold of me and wrapped his arms around my throat, again saying that he was going to kill me. I remember looking over to the table and seeing my cat, Sterling, all puffed up, and I had never seen him so scared. I was fighting to not go unconscious, and I couldn't breathe. I clawed at him, just trying to get his arms off my throat. I remember starting to see black specks in my vision and thinking, "Am I going to die? What is he going to do with my body?" Then he started asking me if I knew what it was like to have unspeakable things done to me. And this is the part where I'm not sure if he was actually out of his mind. I have been assaulted inappropriately before, and it had been a year that month, I guess, and I was very open about how that had been affecting me and open about telling him. He threw me to the ground and put his foot over my head as if to stomp on it. And this was the only time that I had seen his eyes throughout this attack, and they were almost lifeless. His pupils were so dilated you could barely see the iris, and he was yelling over and over again, "Admit it, Lacey. You know what you did. Admit it." I just started apologizing, doing and saying anything I could to make him happy. And this seemed to work as I got the opportunity to scramble to my feet and race out the door, and I just wished that I'd left the screen door open. I ran from house to house in nothing but shorts and a sweater in February in one of the coldest provinces in Canada. I had gotten to maybe 2 to 3 houses before I heard Ollie screaming, and it's a sound I can never get out of my head. I just dropped to the ground, screaming and crying, "Gavin, leave him alone," as I knew in that moment that he killed my dog. At this point, a bunch of the neighbors had heard me and came running to help, An older couple called the police and brought me into their home, not knowing if they were putting their own lives at risk. My parents were living in a completely different province. Someone gave me their phone to call my mom, and she was out for supper with some friends, and I just told her, "Gavin killed the dog and tried to kill me." The police finally showed up after what seemed like hours, 5 or 6 cars, firearms out and ready. They used a megaphone to tell him to come out with his hands up, and he walked out naked, covered in blood. Once they had gotten him into the car, a police officer came to talk to me while the others searched the house, and shortly after, an officer came up and asked how many dogs we had, and I told him 1 and a cat. I asked if Ollie was still alive, and they told me that he was dead in the bathtub. Gavin had killed him in the living room and then brought him into the bathroom, filled up the tub, and put Ollie's body in it. I asked about the cat, and they said they couldn't find him yet, and I was sure that he had killed my sweet boy, too. Sterling was the only thing I could think about, and I went into a panic and was no longer able to give them any more information. I was in tunnel vision, repeating, "Where's my cat? I want my cat. Find my cat." The officers asked if there were any treats that they could use to coax him out and where his hiding spots usually were, and they ended up finding Sterling alive, but he was so scared and attacking the officers. They had blocked off the worst of the scene, so they had me go in to get him. There was still so much blood, and the smell of blood and feces was overpowering. Sterling was in the bedroom on the bed, just crying. I scooped him up and asked the officers to find my vape, and as I was walking out of the house, Gavin's mom had just gotten out of her car. She asked me where Ollie was, and all I could say was, "Gavin killed him." And she just dropped to the ground and started bawling. 2 weeks later, Sterling and I were on a plane to my mom's. The court case took over 2 years, and I later found out Gavin had loaded our guns, and I never wanted to know how he killed Ollie, but when going through the evidence, an officer mentioned a baseball bat, not knowing that I didn't want to know. He only got 10 months of house arrest for all of this. And to this day, 2 years later, he still tries to contact me, blaming me for not getting him help earlier. And I think the worst part is that I do partly blame myself. This happened to me in Tempe, Arizona, not far from Mill Avenue, where all the bars are at. I was out bar hopping with a group of friends one weekend, having a good time, and had gotten pretty wasted. I have this terrible habit of wandering off and getting lost when I drink, and this particular night I had managed to get myself in a very dumb situation. After wandering down streets for almost an hour, I started to realize that I was very lost, and to make things worse, my phone was out of battery. At some point, I decided that I would just walk back to my friend's house, which I knew was somewhere north of an area that we were bar hopping. Now, I should mention that I am severely incompetent when it comes to directions and navigating in a city, so I didn't realize that I was a solid 7 to 8 miles away from my friend's place. As I was stumbling confidently along the empty roads at 2 a.m., a sedan suddenly pulls off the road in front of me, aggressively, almost blocking my path. Somewhat startled, I look towards the driver's side and see a rather large and mean-looking black gentleman staring me down. In situations like this, most people have one of two reactions. They either become scared and defensive or angry and aggressive. I, on the other hand, am an insane person and was just drunk enough to have no sense of the danger that I might be in. Now, I should mention that I am your typical privileged suburban white boy, not particularly threatening or big. And I proceeded to wave at the guy, saying, "Hey man, what's good?" I'm not completely sure, but I think I was probably smiling too. I specifically remember the face that he made. It was sort of confused and conflicted, as if I were asking him what year it was. He paused for a second and asked me something, but I couldn't understand what he said. And I responded back, "Huh?" And he then asked me, "Where are you going?" I told him I was trying to walk to my friend's place, but I have no idea where I am. After another pause, he told me to get in. Now, without thinking, I walk over to the passenger side and hopped in. Pretty dumb, right? Well, at the time, it seemed like a good idea. And once I got in, I was able to get a better look at the guy. He was covered in tattoos and was wearing your typical thug attire. I also noticed his arm was all bandaged. Oh, and he had a pistol clearly tucked into his shorts. And again, for some reason, none of this fazed me at the time. He asked me where my friend's place was, and I gave him directions. Now, I'm pretty sociable and talkative when I drink, so I immediately started chatting with the guy casually. I don't remember exactly what we talked about, but eventually he started telling me that he had just gotten out of the hospital after being treated for a gunshot wound on his arm, and his girl just broke up with him because of it. Apparently, she didn't like that he was in a gang and getting into gunfights. Go figure. He then told me that he was real pissed off about her and about getting shot, and he was driving around looking for someone to rob when he found me, and that he has served time for robbery in the past. At that point, my drunken brain started to connect the dots, and I thought about the roughly $200 that I had in my wallet at that very moment. But instead of freaking out, I just said something like, "Damn, man, that's rough." He also told me that he really wanted to be a rapper, and he was trying to get his music career started. I tried to be supportive, telling him to just go for it. About 10 to 15 minutes later, we pulled up at my friend's place. Now, this is when I should have just gotten out of the car and told the armed man thanks for the ride, but again, I'm an insane person and felt like I owed him one for taking me all the way there, so I asked if he wanted to come in and smoke some, and he said he was down. At this point, my friends had already been back for a while and were all wondering what had happened to me. And as you might expect, they were awfully surprised when I showed up with a strange black guy who I now knew was a gang member who had debated robbing me at gunpoint. What the dude did next sort of sketched everyone out, though. My buddy lives in a house with a few other people. His room is at the very end of the hallway, and that's where they all were listening to music. He also has a huge safe in his closet that is visible as soon as you walk in the room. I didn't realize it, but my new friend had brought his gun inside with him, and shortly after entering the room after everyone said what's up, he took his gun out of his waistband and put it down right on top of the safe in front of everyone. It seemed like a really odd thing to do, but it was a lot better than what he could have done. I feel like it was a sort of show of respect, like he wanted to show that he wasn't going to use it. Luckily, I do have super chill friends, so they acted cool and were about to roll up a blunt, so a few minutes later we all went back to smoke, leaving that gun in his room. The dude chilled with us for a while longer and actually seemed to get along with some of my friends who had a similar interest in music. He then picked up his gun off the safe and left without incident. Looking back, I realized that that could have gone much, much worse. Especially since my buddy had a lot of cash in that safe and could have easily robbed us at gunpoint at any time. And I like to think that although he was a criminal and a gang member, he was also just a guy going through a hard time, and a little kindness and marijuana prevented that night from going very, very bad. Surprisingly, this is one of those stories I forgot about until a few days ago when I was talking to a school friend on call and I got reminded of this. She was pretty freaked when I told her. You see, this happened when I was roughly maybe 7 or 8, so some of the details are a bit fuzzy, but I remember it pretty vividly. This may seem like unimportant context, but my family had just moved to America and were renting the top portion of your regular suburban house in a pretty safe cul-de-sac. I had friends, they were triplets, about 3 or 4 houses down, not far at all, and every day I'd go hang out with them, and around 9 or 10 in the night, my older brother, around 11 or 12 I'd say, would make the 2-minute walk and come and get me and walk me home since I was pretty young. One night he came to get me as usual. The sun wasn't fully down, but it was getting pretty dark. We started down the walk as normal when he started casting glances over his shoulder. I didn't really notice until he shoved me hard away from the sidewalk and between 2 houses. Each house had a huge fence that separated their backyard, not ours though, and he'd made me crouch behind the fence. I remember being really scared, but more confused since I had no damn idea what the hell was going on. More specifically, he was a pretty big prankster. Once he convinced me my older sister crashed her car into the ocean, so I didn't really believe him when he turned and said, "Walk behind the houses. I think someone's following us." Now looking back now, he was probably trying to keep me calm. However, whatever calm was left in my tiny 8-year-old body was gone the moment that I turned around and looked. The man had followed us behind the houses, and he was just by the edge of a few houses down near a different fence line. He had a black hoodie on, with the hood up, black sweatpants, and white sneakers. I had pretty bad eyesight due to some health problems, but back then it was crystal clear, and I could see with horrifying clarity that his jaw was just hanging open, like he was just standing there with his jaw hung open. It was horrifying. I think now that I'm older, maybe he had some kind of medical condition that affected his jaw, or maybe he did crack, I don't know. But back then, I could have sworn on God that I was seeing some kind of demon. Now anyway, my brother, when he saw that I was looking and getting ready to freak out, he told me, "Just run, as fast as I can, to our house." And we booked it. Neither of us looked back, but we were so scared out of our minds. And like I said, we only rented the top portion of the house, so the bottom, with a sliding door in the backyard, belonged to some other tenant. I don't remember if she was home or not, but I remember tugging that thing open and locking it as fast as I can, and when I looked up, he was there in the yard, a little away from the door, just staring at us, with that jaw. Me and my brother told my sister and my mother immediately. My father was away for a work trip at the time, but nothing came of it. Not until the day after. We went to meet my dad at his warehouse, which had a small live-in portion above it where we lazed around until he was ready to head home with us. Around dusk, he came up and told us that we might have to wait since the police were there. He walked us around to the back window of the small area to show us police officers all around the backyard area of the warehouses. There were a few in line, and a white van parked on the grass by the edge of the woods. Like I said, I was pretty young, so I don't remember many details of what actually happened, but I do remember my dad, who hadn't been told about the day prior, telling us that they found a man and a woman in the van. The man, he said, had his mouth hanging wide open. He seemed really disturbed while telling me about the whole thing and wouldn't answer any more questions about the woman. Maybe she was dead, I have zero idea. I do know that they were arrested on trespassing charges. I don't know anything else, and I haven't asked about it. I doubt that he'd remember. It's been over a decade, and he's pushing 70, but it freaks me out to this day. I still can't believe it happened, and I don't have any answers for it. I talked to my brother briefly about it in hopes that he remembered more than I do, but all I got was a long tirade about whatever medical condition the guy probably had for his mouth to be like that. He's an annoying medical student now, and sometimes I think maybe the guy didn't mean any harm and was just drugged out of his mind, but this was in the world's safest neighborhood and doesn't explain why or how he showed up at my dad's workplace. When I was a freshman in high school, Alyssa was my role model. Alyssa was a senior. She was so gorgeous, confident, smart, effortlessly stylish, and always owning the room. Back then, I was too shy to talk to her. Seniors are already pretty intimidating to freshmen, but Alyssa was next level intimidating because she was such a queen. I didn't expect anyone to see me the way that I saw Alyssa, but I was pleasantly surprised in my senior year. And in my senior year, I started finding cute little notes in my locker. I wasn't expecting that at all, but I was really flattered. The first one said, "You were beautiful in that dress on Friday." The handwriting was neat and simple with a cute little heart at the end. More notes kept coming in, always in fourth period too, and I got a note every week or two. I know they came during fourth period because I checked my locker before and after every class. And they were all very sweet, and they said things like, "Your smile lights up the hallway. You shine brighter than any star. Your homecoming photos are straight out of a magazine cover. So stunning." There were more notes that I don't remember. They weren't romantic or flirty, and they looked like things that I might have said to Alyssa if we'd ever spoken. I thought maybe they were from a shy underclassman girl, and I had my suspicions. I didn't tell anyone about the notes, though. I really didn't want my friends turning this into an investigation and embarrassing whoever was leaving them. And whoever was leaving these messages, I genuinely thought they meant well. Then in the second semester, my schedule changed. My last class of the day was upstairs near my friend's locker. My friend's last class was near my locker, and we swapped lockers. I forgot all about the notes until my 18th birthday. And that morning, my friend handed me a note that she found in her, my old, locker, and it said, "Happy birthday, princess." At first, she thought the notes were meant for her, since any of those compliments could fit her too. But when she realized that the birthday didn't match up, she put two and two together. And come to think of it, I don't think any of the notes ever said my name. I admitted that the notes had been happening all year, and I explained that I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. Then my friends launched their investigation that I had been worried about. All the girls in our friend group became detectives trying to solve this little mystery, and one friend, who didn't have a fourth period class, stationed herself by the lockers to survey that area, and it worked. The notes weren't from a shy freshman, or even from a boy. They were from a janitor, an older woman none of us knew. We all recognized her, but I don't think any of us had ever talked to her. She'd been leaving these notes for several months, watching me closely enough to comment on my outfits, field hockey games, and even what I posted on Facebook. I saw her at the last field hockey game of the season. She sat quietly in the stands. That was the only time that I noticed her watching me, but I have no idea how I didn't notice her watching me before. None of us brought this up to her, and she hadn't done anything technically wrong. But it all felt so unsettling in a way that's very hard to explain.